BBC Sounds, music, radio, podcasts. Forest 404.
I'm Pearl Mackey, and I play Pam in Forest 404. But this week's pod talk bounces off the character of Thea. At 300 years old, Thea is an augmented human. In her own words, as much plastic as flesh. So, humans evolving technologically. Humans becoming cyborgs. What do we think? Good thing? Bad thing? In our fifth pod talk, we meet Professor Andy Meyer, a bioethicist whose research focuses on wide-ranging questions about modified humanity, from AI to outer space. Here's Andy.
What fascinates me about the character Thea is the fact that she lives till 300 years. And my entry into human enhancement was about living longer. And it seems to me that the entire project of Western medicine has been about trying to create longer, healthier lives. And so immortality, or the prospect of living much longer, is the kind of ideal way of enhancing humanity. And to do that, we'd have to do lots of things along the way. So what really distinguishes our present times and the possibility of becoming a cyborg is a growing erosion of chance within our lives. These technologies are allowing us to make many more choices about our destination, about where we're going. And for many people, that's a huge burden. Many people would love to just let people come into existence and see what happens. But actually, genetic modification, life extension, all these technologies allow us to take ownership and responsibility for those choices. And it's not a simple one. But actually, if we do so, we can alleviate some of those huge burdens that we face across our lives. And I would argue that, in fact, we need to do that in order to ensure that people can be free from the vast amounts of suffering that exist presently in the world. So when we think about distinguishing between types of human enhancement, we can look at things that are operating around the beginning of life, even before life begins, at the point of perhaps selecting embryos and deciding how we ensure that they are free from kind of biological burdens, right up until the end of life, where we're trying to push back against aging and as a condition that we have to accept as part of our existence. Which is a hugely radical thing for people to take on board. But if you get to the end of your life and you feel that your quality of life is good, you've got emotional support around, you've got family, friends that you care about, why would you want it to end? That commitment to living longer, living indefinitely, perhaps living forever, is an entirely logical consequence of valuing life in the first place. And so for me, the cyborg we want to become is the one that's capable of living far beyond what humans can currently live and perhaps living forever. So one of the big questions facing this era of cyborgs that we're embarking into is the possibility that it destabilizes many aspects of our society. So at the moment, if you go to university or if you take an exam, it may be down to you and your abilities as to how well you do. But if you're taking a drug to enhance your cognitive abilities, the results that you get may in fact be partly due to that medication or that technology. We are allowing people to be successful, not on the basis of what they have, but on their capacity to actually embrace and utilize technology. So these are vastly destabilizing ideas and principles and applications. And at the moment, we have to decide how far we're prepared to go down that route. Do we embrace the kind of technocracy of the future, the idea that, in fact, to bring about some greater degree of equality, we have to allow people to use as much technology as possible? Or do we say that, in fact, we want to hold back and push back on ideas like genetically modified people or the cyborg as a way of living and say we need to put the brakes on? Becoming a cyborg is not about trying to exacerbate inequalities within society. In fact, what should appeal to us about the cyborg is the possibility of making society more equal as a result of embracing technology more fully. And whilst people worry about the possibility that if everyone can live longer and live healthier lives, that this would only be available to kind of the rich and those that can afford the technologies, there's actually a really strong public health argument for making this available to everybody. And so people at the lower kind of economic side of things will actually benefit more proportionally than the people that are at the higher end of it. So far from this kind of cyborg future being a world in which we have the haves and the have-nots, the people that really can't afford anything and wither on the vine, so to speak, it's something that will I think, revolutionise how we think about healthcare and social responsibility. Many people have argued that, well, that's not the history of technology. It becomes something that does become privatised or something that only people can afford. But actually, if you look at the long-term perspective on human enhancement, it's actually really compelling to think about this as being available for everybody. One of the big topics today in science is around genetic editing, the possibility of actually picking out and putting in specific genes that hopefully can alleviate suffering. But the implication is that we could use these to bring about all sorts of lifestyle modifications. The big worry people have about this is the possibility that people born as a result of gene editing may actually pass on genes that will be detrimental to our long-term survivability, or we might take out things that we need later on. And this gets to the heart of one of the big controversies around human enhancement. We don't know enough about our biology to know what actually matters about it. And because science, medicine are still not quite exact, we have to think about the long-term implications of this uncertainty that surrounds these decisions to bring about a culture of human enhancement. If we ultimately don't know enough about our biology tampering with it, then perhaps we should leave it alone.
That was Andy Meyer talking to producer Eliza Lomas. The theme music was composed by Bonobo, with sound design by Graham Wilde and Becky Ripley. Next up on your 404 feed, this week's soundscape. As ever, headphones are best. There's also the Forest 404 experiment, where you can help chart human responses to the sound of nature. To link to the survey, go to bbc.co.uk/forest. And next on Forest 404, the shock for Thea, a weird turn of events for Daria, and a DJ set like you've never heard before. See you on the other side.
Forest 404. All episodes available now on BBC Sounds.